remove one of the eyes and you put a perch eye on that treble hook of that spoon, you're going to catch a lot more fish.
Are you kidding me?
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
All righty, here we are, just before Christmas. We should be ice fishing by now, but I tell you what, we talked about this a few episodes back, JD, where I was getting frustrated with the fall bite not kicking into full gear because we'd have 3-4 really cold days, and then it would jump right back up into 50s and 60s, and the water temp could just not drop enough to where it stabilized. And it finally did in deer season when I need to be in the woods. And like I said, I got a deer opening day, so that gave me a little bit of freedom to, and I worked and got my count where I wanted it. I broke the 37,000 milestone, and then I concentrated and went back in the woods, shot a five pointer, got two deer in the freezer. That was all well and good. But now we're seeing the same thing. We've had a snowstorm. We had 12 inches of snow on Thanksgiving, followed by warm temps, an inch and a half of rain. All our snow was gone. All that snow melt and runoff. The creeks and rivers were blown out of their banks. It was crazy. So we started looking at lakes again. We went out 2 days ago to Canandaigua Lake. We fished. We were on the water at 7:45. The air temp was 36 degrees.
So you were in the boat. You weren't.
Oh no, we were in a boat. My tournament partner had his boat service this fall, and just before bow season, he's a bow hunter, so he has not had it out, and he's dying to run it. And he said, "Hey, it's going to be above freezing. It's supposed to warm up that day." It didn't. It was 36 degrees when we put the boat in the water, and it ran great. 7:45, we were on the water. We were off the water at 1 o'clock.
When it's that cold outside, can the impeller freeze in the engine?
If the temperature continues to drop on the way home, you better not have a long drive. I showed him one of my tricks. When you pull out, right? It was, what was the air temp when we pulled out? I can't recall what the air temp was when we pulled. It was above freezing. It was still above freezing. And it was supposed to have warmed up, but I think that the air temp stayed the same. It was like 36, 37 when we pulled out at 1 o'clock. But there was a storm front approaching, and we didn't want to get soaked. It was 40 minutes to our north, moving northeast. It was already raining in Utica at 1 o'clock, and we said, time to hit the road. One of my tricks is when you run an outboard this time of year, when you pull out, I only go out if it's going to be above freezing. And when I pull out, the first thing I do is I trim that outboard all the way down so all the drainable water can come out of it while I'm doing transom straps, checking lights, doing everything I do to get ready to run the rig back down the road, stowing gear, strapping rods down, all that stuff. The last thing I do before I pull out of that parking lot, as long as it's stopped dripping, is trim that motor up, put it on the transom saver, and book. That way, there's all the water has drained out, and he keeps his inside in a building anyway, so it would be warmer in there, and if anything did start to, you know, freeze on the way back because of the wind while you're driving, there's very little there that can do. There's plenty of room for it to expand, and it thaws out once it's in this building. So there wasn't a risk of damaging anything, but that's one you got to drain that engine before you trim it, stow it to drive home. That's all. It's pretty simple, and it went home dry. So, but it took us an hour and a half to find the fish, start getting bit. But once we did, we were targeting perch. We caught 56 fish. In just under 4 hours, it was pretty incredible. And they bit hard. They bit aggressive. We caught a bunch of good ones. And that was 2 days ago. Yesterday, just because I saw what the temperature is going to do now, it was 21 degrees when I got up at 5 this morning. 4:30, actually. I got up at 4:30. I checked the temperature at 5. It was 21 degrees. We're going to have single digits the next couple days. Wind chills below zero. We're going to ice back up, which brings us to today's topic, which is ice fishing. We've never talked about that before, so this will be our first ice fishing installment. I don't know how many listeners we have out there who do ice fish. We have any in the southern portion of the country. They probably think we're crazy, and yeah, we may be a little bit. I can admit to that. I love to ice fish.
So do you count your bass through the ice towards your bass count as well?
Absolutely. Total bass caught in a year. When I'm ice fishing, I don't target bass at all. They happen to be bycatch. I target perch, bluegill, walleye. I target fish I want to harvest in the winter. But again, I selectively harvest. We'll go out and we'll catch 50, 60 perch, and we'll bring back 15, you know. We always put a lot back. We did that the other day. We didn't keep 56 fish. Good grief. I don't want to clean that many. I have a dinner coming up. It's called a table lodge. And one of the courses we want to serve is fish tacos. We're expecting around 50 people, one per person. So I talked to our main cook. He said, if you can get, you know, two dozen, that'll be 48 fillets. You need one per taco. And we have like nine courses, so we give people one per serving.
Where is this?
What's that?
Where is this taking place?
This is taking place at our Masonic Lodge, right?
At the Masonic Lodge, okay.
We can only take about 50 people because of our, you know, our space. And that's the max, is about 50 people. So I kept 26 perch, that's 52 fillets, and I had another thing going on that evening. I did 52 fillets in 55 minutes without cutting myself. That's pretty fast. Pretty fast. And I never cut myself. I was flying.
What is the price of admission into this event?
We're still discussing that. It's gone up over the years. Right now it's like we're thinking about $50 to cover expenses. But it's called the Table Lodge of Moose and Squirrel. It's entirely wild game. Nothing domestic. I tell you what, we have had everything from, we've always had venison, but we've had bear, we've had moose, we've had elk, caribou, alligator. We did poor man shrimp with my perch for 5 years, and I'm doing fish tacos to get away from that because I use up so many perch for the poor man shrimp, but it's all this work, all this preparation for one of our appetizers, and it's gone in 2 minutes. We're talking days of preparation. Come on. So
appetizers.
Yeah.
Appetizer. There's no R.
Well,
I'm going to start keeping track of these words that you recreate the pronunciation on, because they're quite incredible.
Yeah.
Call it a bilbyism. Bilbyism. Appetizer. Alrighty. And speaking of Christmas, you've got a gift coming your way. I got you something.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
I'm going to drop it off at your house.
Well, that's appreciated.
And you need to have your wife or whoever film you opening it. And then I want you to put it on your Instagram. Okay? Can you do that?
I give you my word I'll do that.
Okay. Good.
Got me curious.
No, yeah, you should be. You should be, because I'm curious, Santa. I got it back in October, thinking ahead for you. So
wow, mm-hmm. That's very, very thoughtful.
You know, tis the season, Roy. Tis the season.
Giddy up, yes, sir. Well, getting back on our ice fishing, I have not been out yet. We went out again yesterday on the creek, just because I wanted a few more smallmouth to cap off my year. Like I said, we've got a cold snap coming. That creek is going to ice right back up. Had the pocket that we fished had ice on the lower end. We went out and we had rain yesterday. We ended up as snow at our house. So the creek was a little swollen. Visibility was less than 12 inches. There was a lot of current. We fished 3 hours. We put 24 smallmouth in that boat. It was awesome. Almost like a last hurrah, because we're going to be on the ice next time we'll go out. The guy I fished with yesterday had already been on the ice once. And then 2 days later is when we went to Canada Rego to fish. And we drove past the lake that he ice fished on. And we'd had that warm up, and the upper end was open from one side to the other. And there were two guys ice fishing the south end. I'm like, good grief, do they know the water's open up there? We were joking amongst ourselves that they're watching us haul a boat down the road, standing on the ice, and they're thinking, those guys are nuts. And we're looking at the upper end of that lake being wide open, and we're thinking, those guys are nuts. So got to be a little bit crazy to do what we do this time of year, putting a boat on open water or ice fishing on a lake that's only half froze. But I've done that too, so I digress. The first thing I do, first rule of thumb, early season, going out for the first time to ice fish, I'm going to check that ice. I'm not going to take somebody's word for it. I go out, the lake he fished the other day, he did the same thing, my buddy. He went only about 20 feet off the bank. There's a very shallow where you put in. It's very shallow out for about 50 feet. You're still up to your knees. So that's a great place to check the ice. I don't check it right on the bank because I don't want to put those auger blades into the bottom mud and muck. Those blades have to be razor sharp because they actually shave the ice to cut your hole. So I'm always protective of those blades. I'm going to go, if I break through because it's not thick enough, I'm only going in up to my knees and I can be back in my truck in a minute. So that's where I check the thickness of the ice. To support people, the general rule of thumb is 3 inches or more. I have fished on less. I do not do that anymore. I don't. If it's not 3 inches, you know what? I can wait. And so I'm going to check it there. I'm also going to walk out a ways, make sure it's the same thickness farther out. As long as it's thick enough, I'm going to go ice fishing. That's early season. Once I've been out on several lakes and we're well into the season, I mean, you're fishing on 10, 12, 15, 18, 26 inches of ice. You don't have to check it at that point. But a cool thing, early in the year, if we don't have snow cover, you get black ice. That's really cool to fish on. And black ice is very hard ice, but it's deceiving because you can see through it and you can have 8 inches of black. As long as you don't get any snow cover, it just gets really cold. You can have like 8 inches of black ice, but it's deceiving because there's going to be fissures and cracks in it. As we know, as water freezes, it expands, it swells. When you're out there on the ice, if you've not done ice fishing before, you hear it crack and pop, and it freaks people out. I took a guy out for his first ice fishing expedition. We had plenty of ice, but it was a very cold day. So the ice was expanding and freezing all day long. It was cracking and popping. And sometimes if people have ice fished, they'll be nodding their heads here listening to this. You'll hear it and see it crack right between your feet. And if you're not used to it, it'll freak you out. And that's what happened with this guy. He was losing his mind. He's like, oh, we're going to die out here. I'm like, Larry, the ice is 20 inches thick. It's doing that because it's getting thicker today. All right. He's like, you sure? I said, yeah, I'm sure. Drilled holes. We measured the thickness. I showed him how thick it was. You're not going to fall through. But he was freaking out all day. And you feel the ice move.
Yep.
When it pops and freezes and does that, and when it shifts, but
it sings as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's what scares me. I don't like the sound of it singing when it's cracking. That's
yeah. It does freak you out, but you get used to it. But he was not used to it at all. And me, being me, I took full advantage of that because this guy happened to be the most paranoid guy I've ever met in my life, and I often took advantage of that. At his expense. Like that first time I took him out on the ice, we're walking out and I'd been ice fishing a number of times by then. I knew the ice was safe. There was a couple, two groups on the ice before us out across on the other side. We're walking out there. I mean, You should see him when he's dragging his box out there. He's stepping on. I just walked out onto the ice. I'd already been ice fishing. I knew it was safe. And he's standing on the edge with 1 foot over, you know, like people test the water in the pool. He's tapping on it with his foot. I'm like, come on, you're falling behind. It's safe, you know? He's like, well, how do you know? I said, it's safe. I've been here before. So he comes walking out gingerly. He catches up to me, and one of those fishers, you know, you hear the ice go, and a crack goes right between our feet, and he freezes. He's like, oh my. And I turned to him, and I let my eyes get really big. I said, don't move. And he's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. He's starting to freak out. And I'm Roy, like, set your stuff on the ice. He's like, okay, okay, okay. He's hyperventilating. And he said, what do we do? What do we do? I said, we got to check the ice here. I think it's weak here. And I start jumping up and down. He's like, what are you doing? I'm laughing so hard. I'm like, Larry, I've been here. It's 20 inches thick. I told you, it's getting thicker. Oh, he was livid. He was so upset with me. Once I drilled our first hole and he saw how thick it was, he's like, oh, you were right. I said, good. I told you, I've been here before. He was so easy to mess with. But I want to get back to the black ice, because that can be deceiving. When you look at it, you can see those cracks that go down through that sheet of ice. It's deceiving, because it makes it look like the ice is only a half inch thick. Yet in fact, it can be 8-10 inches thick. But the cool thing about black ice, it's like a mirror. It's like frosted glass on a shower door. You can see through it. Things aren't crystal clear, but you can see. You can see the grass. You can, if it's shallow, you can see the bottom. When you hook a fish, you can see him moving around below that ice. And when you release him, you can watch him swim away. It's very cool. But word to the wise, if you've got black ice, have some cleats. I've got like 5 or 6 different sets of cleats I carry in my ice box, because not everybody's going to have them. And if I see black ice, I do not hesitate. I put those on before I walk on the ice, because if you're not one of those people who minds your feet going up in front of your face and landing on your butt on a surface as hard as concrete, then by all means, you know, enjoy the black ice. I'm going to be wearing cleats. I'm going to be wearing the cleats. Another thing to watch out for when you're on early ice, or any time for that matter, doesn't matter. You could have snow cover. Watch out for what we call spring seeps. If you've got a lake that's got springs in it, you're going to have, watch out for wet spots on the ice. This lake that my buddy ice fished on Monday, there's a drainage, a creek that comes in on the upper end, and that's why that upper end was open. It's usually open a little ways into the lake and it freezes right up, but because of that warm spell, that drainage was coming in, it had made it all the way across and opened the upper end of that thing. You could have put a boat in it. And there's guys ice fishing, good grief, not that far down the lake from that. So beware of any open water that you see and stay well away from it. What I'm going to be doing before I go out for my first ice trip, I'm going to be going through my box, my sled. I use a jet sled, but I carry a lot. You'll find this surprising, JD. I carry a tremendous amount of gear when I ice fish. Can you believe that?
How big of a sled do you pull it in?
Right now, I use a jet sled, not the biggest one, the medium size, but that wasn't enough. So I built a wooden frame on top of it with 2 doors that pop open so I can get more gear in it and have it enclosed in case we get freezing rain, drizzle, or snow. All my gear stays dry. But my first ice box, I said, I'm making 3 or 4 trips out onto the ice with all this gear. That's a lot of hiking. I need to build a box and put it on skis. I'd seen an article in a magazine where people had built those. So I built my first ice sled, my ice fishing box, on skis years ago, good, almost 40 years ago. And I've still got it. I was, that was in my early days. I didn't have my first bass boat yet, but I was dreaming of it. Wanted a Bass Tracker so bad. So I built this huge box. It filled the bed of my pickup truck. That's how big this box was. My son would climb inside and close the doors and, you know, take a snooze if it was a really cold day ice fishing. But I could put the power head for my gas auger. I could put my auger in it, all my tip-ups, 5-gallon pail, bait buckets, electronics, extra clothing, lunches, thermos. Everything was all self-contained in this box. It was huge. And I put it on skis. I went through 3 different sets of skis on that, going through snow drifts and breaking ski tips off. Then it drags really hard. I made a rope handle, but so that if I was going down a bank to the lake, so the box wouldn't overrun me, I made a U-shaped PVC handle and ran the rope through it so that the handle, the pull handle, was rigid for going down a hill. And it made it so the box wouldn't, I could hold it back with a handle. So it was really handy, but it weighed a ton. And I just, over the years, you evolve. So what I have now is a jet sled, what I put a wooden frame on. I carry all my gear in that, but my rod box that holds my jigging rods, I take about a dozen jigging rods. I have 8 in my rod box, and I have another 4 or 5 inside my sled. The one I use for my rods is one my son found and picked up for me. It's an Eagle Claw box. Very nice, all foam lined. Your rods don't move around. It'll hold a couple boxes of jigs in there. And I strap that on top with a ratchet strap so it doesn't slide off. Carry everything out onto the ice, and I'm all set up. I do have a portable shanty, but I'm not a guy that uses one. I have a brand new one. It's very nice. I've set it up, I think, twice ever. I move around so much. I don't want to be tearing down and setting it up, tearing down. Set. We move around and try to stay on the fish. So I'm considering one of those pullover clam style. It's a sled with a shanty built in. You have 1 or 2 seats. I can't even find a 1-seater anymore. I think they're all 2-seaters now. But it's nice. You just pull up. That's perfect for a guy like me who's constantly on the move, trying to keep up with the fish or relocate fish once they've moved off. Because you can just pull it wherever you want it. Pull it over, drill your hole, set up, and you're inside. But generally, we're out in the open air. We're open air fishermen. Don't mind the cold. It's got to be colder. You're not going to be ice fishing, right? It's a blast. Ice fishing is really, really cool. But before I go out for the first time, I was raised using tip-ups. Nobody in my family jigged. I was the first one to start it because I'd read articles on it, how effective it was. I made myself a jigging rod out of an old broken fiberglass rod, used a broomstick for a handle, drilled it out, slid the reel seat on. I made my own jigging rod. And man, when I started catching fish on that, it just opened up a whole new world for me. So now I still use tip-ups. Some days I'll only jig, but most days I set up tip-ups and I jig because it keeps all the options open. And there have been days when I've been using both, when I only caught them on tip-ups, and also days when I only caught them jigging. And if I hadn't been doing both, there's a chance I would have gone without fish that day. And that's kind of against my rules. I need to catch fish. I don't like getting skunked. The first thing I'll do before I go out for the first time of the year would be I'll check my tip-ups, make sure the line is good. The setup I use now is very efficient. I set them up so they trip lightly. I strip my flags. What I mean by that is I have large flags on the tip-ups, and on a windy day, they'll catch a lot of wind, and sometimes they'll cause it to trip. So I take scissors, and I just cut them in strips so that they don't catch all that wind, and it prevents you from getting what we call a wind flag or a false trip where your flag goes up and you run out there and the spool hasn't even turned. I put markers on mine so I know if the spool has tripped. I use little teeny tiny floats as line markers. So once I sound the hole and figure out where the bottom is and raise my spool enough so that my bait is positioned roughly 12 inches off the bottom, that's where I set them. I mark it with that little tiny float on top of the spool clipped to my line. So whenever a fish has run, once I catch that fish, I can go right back to the exact same depth setting without measuring anything. And I use a very, very thin steel leader because most places I ice fish, you've got pike, pickerel, and they're going to bite through snells. So I use a braided steel leader with a small snap, and I use a small treble hook. We always used to use a single hook on our tip-ups. That's the way I was brought up. But I ran into a guy who ice fishes a lot, and he was using treble hooks. And I asked him about that. He said, Ed, I get better hookups. And, well, I do too. So that's what I use now. But after every ice fishing expedition, I don't leave those on my tip-ups. I take them off, and I make sure they're dried out before I pack them up. I'll be going through my tip-ups, making sure everything is good and ready to go. I'll be checking my jigging rods. I have 4 jigging rods I use 6-pound braid on for those warm, sunny days when you're out ice fishing and it's 40 degrees and you're not going to have to worry about your line icing up or your guides icing up. I have Berkley Trilene ice line on my other jigging rods for those days when it's really cold. The braid holds the water and will ice up a lot quicker, whereas the ice line, you'll still get ice in your guides, but not to the degree that you do with the braid. So depending on the air temperatures when I'm ice fishing, that determines which jigging rods I'm going to use based on the line that I have them set up with. One of the greatest advancements in the last number of years that we've had for ice fishing is the advent of the tungsten jigs. Now, we all know that the tungsten sinkers, as opposed to lead, they're half the size by weight as opposed to the lead. Same thing with your ice fishing jigs. And when we're ice fishing, we're using little tiny jigs that used to be referred to as teardrop jigs. And I had a ton of those. Now I've completely retooled with tungsten jigs. If I'm jigging and using like a wax worm or a mealworm, I'll have a tungsten jig on the bottom, and about 6 inches, 8 inches above that, I'll have a regular teardrop jig because my tungsten jig is going to carry it to the bottom faster. And you'd be surprised. There's days when all your fish come on that bottom jig. There will be days when 90% of your fish come on that upper jig. It all depends on where they are in relation to the bottom. It's the neatest thing how these fish can be so particular from one day to the next. Sometimes it matters greatly what color is on that jig. Other days, it couldn't matter less. It all depends on the attitude of the fish on any particular given day. Now, when I'm using the wax worms, when I'm jigging with those tungsten jigs, I'm generally targeting bluegill and perch. We've got some lakes that are just, you can go out and have 100 fish days. You can do that. You've just got to find the fish, find where they're grouped up. And that's the thing. They tend to group up and school heavily in the wintertime. Perch and bluegill especially. Well, crappie too. And these are the fish I target through the ice. And I tell you what, fresh fish caught through the ice, you won't find better table fare. It's phenomenal. And the thing about ice fishing as opposed to regular fishing, how much ice fishing have you done yourself?
I've only visited somebody who was fishing on the ice like once when I was super young. You know, I've like your friend in the beginning, I've got a little bit of a fear of walking on ice. I had a friend/acquaintance of mine when I was in middle school, fell through the ice up on Champlain. They never found him.
Oh, so, yeah, that'll do it.
He was cross country skiing and went through. Oh, so, boy. I mean, it makes it pretty hard to tread water when you have skis on.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, so that was enough for me. You know. I know that there are safety precautions. You know, you carry ice outs, you got them on you, and you do all you can, but still.
The problem is I've seen most people put around their waist and clip them together like what? A belt.
You're supposed to wear them through your coat. You're supposed to have them in your sleeves, right?
Do not do that. If you go through the ice, number one, you gotta keep your head above water. That's hard to do when you're reaching down trying to take something off you that's a belt, and then it's in the wrong position. You got to spin it around behind your back and get in front of you. I wear it around my neck. I don't care what it looks like. If I ever go through the ice, it's going to be right up there around my neck where I can just unclip it, and they're already in my hands in the position to reach up and stab that ice and drag myself out. You can't do it without those. If you've just gone through the ice you're trying to climb out on is now covered with water and slick like oil on glass. You need those spikes to stab in there and get a grip to drag yourself out. But when you go through, that water is so cold. And I mean, you're ice fishing, so you're going to have a heavy insulated suit on. When that absorbs water, it's going to get heavy and try to pull you down. You've only got about a minute to try to get yourself out. And I don't ice fish alone. I always go with a partner. We're there for each other if something ever happens. Now, Striker makes, and other companies make ice fishing suits that are flotation suits as well. So if you break through, you're not going to go down. You're going to float, which is brilliant. I don't have one of those. I do have a buddy. He'll wear his PFD when he's on the ice. Also smart. And if you've got one of the inflatables, they're not bulky. They're comfortable. You don't even know it's there. There's all kind of precautions you can take. When my son and I take you out on that pike trip, we will definitely be out there checking the ice first and making sure it's all good to go. We'll measure the thickness, and we'll get you out there safe and sound.
Beautiful.
So yeah, we'll take care of it. Now, ice fishing electronics have come of age for ice fishing. For years, we've been using a flasher, which is great. I have an old Humminbird Ice 35. People pick on me because, wow, how old is that thing? It's not that old, okay? It's full color. It does everything your fancy one does. Does the same thing. I was always a Humminbird guy. If you don't know what a flasher is, it's one of the first. It is the first level of electronics for fishing that ever came out. It's a round dial, and it'll have graduations on it, generally down to 40 feet around the dial. And then there's secondary screens for 80 feet, 120, and so forth. And when you turn it on, it's like radar. It's sonar. But you'll see generally a red flash on that screen where the bottom is. That's your transducer sending down the signal, and it measures depth by the amount of time it takes for that echo to come back from that signal hitting the bottom and coming back to the transducer. That's how it determines the depth, which you'll see on the screen. I mean, if that red flash is right around 12 foot to the bottom. The thing about the flashers is, though, and very similar to the forward-facing sonar, unlike the LCR screens, the liquid crystal readouts that we have on the traditional fishing depth finders, it doesn't show you what you've gone over or what's passed under. It shows you what's there right now. With the flasher, with it running, your transducer in the hole, it's showing you where that bottom is. And if that band where the bottom is thick and alternating, there's fish there right on the bottom. When you put your jig or your spoon or whatever you're using down that hole, you'll see another line go down on that dial. That's your bait dropping to the bottom. So you can see where that bait is and drop it before it ever gets to the bottom and either gets hung in grass or hung on a stick up or something like that. You can stop it and suspend it over bottom without having to touch the bottom. The cool thing about a flasher is, and I'm old school, so I love watching this. We all do. You'll see fish separate from the bottom and come up to your bait. So you've got a little red flashing where your bait is, and then you've got these lines coming off the bottom up to that. When those two lines touch, your rod tip bounces. That's a strike. and you can see that fish coming up on your screen. Now, with forward-facing sonar, they do have ice packages. They're pricey. You're going to spend several thousand dollars to watch these images on your screen move around, but you're still ice fishing. You can see fish 30 feet from you, go and drill a hole over there and hope you don't spook the fish. I know guys use it with success. My son is anxious because he just bought the ice fishing bundle, saved a lot because it was the Bass Pro Shops Black Friday week sale that he bought it at, and saved a couple grand, but he still spent three, I think. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays into ice fishing when you can see fish around you, yet you're still stuck fishing vertically. You know what I mean? That's what you're doing with ice fishing. You're fishing vertically. And people wonder how you can go on a huge lake and drill a hole and fish straight down what you can't cast. You can't cover water, theoretically, but you can. When we leave, the ice looks like Swiss cheese.
I'm sure.
We cover water. We've left the ice and counted 300 holes. We cover all kinds
300
of
holes?
Yes, sir.
Well, that's multiple people doing drilling. That isn't just you doing it, right?
That's me and my partner.
300 holes?
Not kidding. We cover water. We cover a lot of water. Yeah, huh. I'm not kidding.
I mean,
we've done that.
And that's just you going hole to hole and jigging, or are you putting tip-ups out there?
That's running around. I'll drill 15 in a line, and I'll jig them back and forth to cover water, determine the depth where they're at. If I don't find them, I'm drilling 15 more holes. He's doing the same thing. We've had some long days where we left the ice and said, good grief, that was 300 holes. But we caught 50 fish. Worth it? 100%.
That's a gas-powered, and that's a gas-powered auger, right?
That was back in those days. Now I use a cordless drill. I got 5-amp-hour lithium batteries. You want to have a handle that you can thread onto the side of that drill so it gives you two points of contact. You don't want to just have the drill, because if that auger catches on something, it's going to wrench your wrist something horrible. And when you use it, most of your cordless drills will have a high-low feature on them. Just use the low feature. Use the slower speed. It'll go plenty fast enough, but it will give you more torque and cut better. Just let the auger shave its way down through. They are so efficient now. There's a couple really good ones out there. The one I use is called a pistol bit. It's made by Eskimo. I've got a 6-inch pistol bit and an 8-inch pistol bit. They weigh less than the drill. Just lock them in. Make sure it's got a disc on top of it. When they first started making them, sometimes the torque will actually loosen up the chuck on the drill, and that auger will cut a hole, and then it goes right to the bottom of the lake, and you're out $160. So the thing I like about the pistol bit is they have right on top of the auger, but below the shaft that goes into the chuck of your drill, they have a disc on top that's like a 1/4 inch larger in diameter than the hole that you're cutting. So even if it comes out of that chuck, it's going to stop right on top of the ice, and you don't lose your bit. The 8-inch, of course, will drain your battery quicker, but I carry 4 batteries with me, 2 5-amp-hour batteries, and additionally, the 2 smaller batteries that came with the drill when I bought it. If I use that 5-amp-hour battery and we're getting on fish quick, I never even drain one battery during the day. If I'm drilling 300 holes, I'm going through my batteries, but I'm finding fish. If you're still using a gas-powered auger and lugging all that weight out onto the ice, check out the new ice augers, battery-powered. They are slick. They're a lot lighter, easier to carry, and incredibly, incredibly efficient. We used to use a hand auger back in the day when I was a kid starting out fishing. That's all we had. I graduated to the gas auger when I was an adult, and I've been using a cordless for the last five seasons. Check them out. If you're not using one, do yourself a favor, find one. It's worth the investment. Absolutely, 100%. Now, when I'm jigging, I talked about the tungsten ice jigs, and we use those a lot. But there's also lures that you can use that are incredibly efficient. And I use the in fisherman approach, where I start out aggressive. And if the fish are aggressive, then you're all set. If I'm not getting bit on an aggressive lure, and by that I mean one like the jigging Rapala, the nice thing about the jigging Rapala is, it looks like a minnow, which is, and fish are eating those all winter long. They eat them year round. This is a very good replica of a minnow, but it glides. And when you lift it and let it free fall, it glides in a wide arc around that hole. So if you got a 6 or 8 inch hole, you're not just fishing vertically that 8 inch column. That jigging Rapala is swinging out wide in an arc. You're actually covering more water with it, but it's a bait that moves pretty fast. So it's designed to trigger active, aggressive fish. And if you're on aggressive fish, you're going to catch them all day with that, and you're all set. If I don't get bit on that, I'll drop back to a spoon, either a crocodile spoon, an Acme Castmaster, or my favorite, known as the Swedish Pimple. I use the size 3 and 4 most of the time, and more often than not, my bread and butter rig is a chrome Swedish Pimple that's got a chartreuse panel on one side with a red teaser. And which is like a little plastic willow leaf that clips on the split ring that holds your treble hook. Just gives it a little added flash. And they come in white, orange, yellow, chartreuse, red, every color. More often than not, I'm using a red teaser with a chartreuse panel on one side of that spoon. But they come in a hammered finish. We've got one lake in particular where the fish prefer suckers that have a brown coloration with a white body. So in that lake, more often than not, I'm jigging with a hammered Swedish Pimple in a gold color with a white teaser. And that catches more fish for me in that lake than any other combo. And I believe because it resembles the suckers that the small suckers that those fish in that lake prefer, as opposed to the shiners or fatheads. They really prefer those suckers. And the suckers are a lot more durable on a hook throughout the day. Most people, when they're using a minnow on a tip-up, there's two ways to rig them. You either hook them through the dorsal fin, just behind it, in that meaty portion, so they can swim freely, or you nose-hook them. I nose-hook them because most predator fish grab them and try to swallow them head first. This is out of instinct because they eat a lot of young of the year perch, bluegill, and fish like that that are known as spiny rayed fish, whereas their dorsal fin will have one with 5 or 6 spines in it, followed by a soft one. And if you swallow a spiny rayed fish tail first, those spines are going to get caught in your throat. So instinctively, and pike, they're notorious for this. They'll grab that bait from the side. They'll ambush it and make their initial run. Then they'll pause and they'll turn it and swallow it head first. And then they'll take off on a second run. By nose hooking those fish, when they take it head first, you've always got the hook in them. Ice fishing is the only time of year that I actually use live bait. If I'm fishing open water, I'm always using artificials. That's just me. I don't care if anybody else does it. That's just my own personal deal. But when I'm ice fishing, if you're not losing live bait on a tip up, it's not going to do anything. Wax worms, mealworms, highly productive for the panfish that we're targeting in the winter. And I catch plenty on the spoons as well, if they're aggressive. If they're not, that's when you want to drop back to those wax worms and those little tungsten jigs, and you want to finesse those fish. But some days, man, you can put 100 fish on the ice just jigging, and it's fish after fish after fish. Doesn't get boring, never gets old. It's always a blast, and it's well worth the effort. But wintertime through the ice is the only time you'll ever see me use live bait. I was raised doing it, and it's highly productive when you really got to finesse those fish. But a little trick for if you're using a spoon, like I prefer that Swedish pimple. What we used to do, and we've kind of gotten away from it, but if we're targeting perch and want to keep a bunch of perch, the first one we catch, if he's a keeper, we'll pop him. We always pop him on the head to kill him. Remove one of the eyes, and you put a perch eye on that treble hook of that spoon, you're going to catch a lot more fish.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you.
You sit there and you dig
it's
that.
It's unbelievable the difference it makes.
You dig the fish eye out of the fish. You put it on a treble hook. Why not? Right. Why not put on three? Why not put on three eyeballs?
Too
got
much,
three hooks
too
there.
Too much hanging off the back. Because one is all it takes. You get a couple of hits on that, it starts to get a little bit raggedy, and it's just attracted to the fish. I don't know if it smells like bait. I don't know.
You're basically chumming the water with an eyeball. That's chum. You're chumming.
Yeah. I would have to agree with that. We've had days, the way we got onto that, we'd heard about it. And we've had days where just using a spoon, you've only caught one or two jigging in the first couple hours. And like, man, they should be biting better than this. They're like, hey, all right, let's pop one. And we'll put on the perch eyes, and all of a sudden you're into them left and right. Okay. Not kidding. If they're perching in your lake up there where you were.
Yes.
Is there perch there?
There are.
All right. Then we catch perch. We'll do that. You won't believe how it works. It's as crazy as it sounds. It does work. And if there's guys out there listening that have done it, they're nodding their head right now going, they ain't no lie. It's wild. It works. When we get you out on the ice, we will introduce you to that. But don't discount lures in the wintertime. They do work. It's a blast. I mean, it's fishing. Why do I ice fish? Everybody knows how much I love standing in a boat and casting. But if I didn't ice fish, I'd be waiting till April. I can't do that. Good grief. If I go 2 days without fishing, my hands start shaking uncontrollably. Give me a break. I got to fish. So that's it. That's how I get through the winter. Small game hunting and ice fishing. And I look forward to it every year. More so this year, because last year was tough. It was so mild. Last winter, I was on the ice twice, and I fished from a boat 11 times. That was our winter. So as much as I enjoyed the boat the last 2 days, we felt like we were getting away with something. It's the end of December and we're in a boat. And the standing joke is, you know, where is everybody? There's nobody on the lake. We got an altar. Where is everybody? You know?
No, you're the crazy one.
Because we're out there wearing ice fishing suits in a boat because we can. And that's the only reason.
Lovely.
Well, listen, I'm waiting to get out on the ice. Can't wait to do it. It's going to be a good ice fishing year.
I'm sure it will. Check out Roy Bilby on Instagram at all lowercase Roy Bilby and slide into his DMs. He'll be happy to chat about some Swedish pimples.
Yes, sir. Take this information. If you haven't tried ice fishing before, do it this year. You'll find it very interesting. It keeps you fishing. Get out on the ice and tap into your Angler Within.